Hi, this is Wendy Cavanaugh, GSAE President, and today I'm speaking with Jeff DeCagna, FRSAE, who's the Executive Advisor for Foresight First, LLC, located in lovely Reston, Virginia. Jeff has kindly written a very provocative article for the spring issue of GSAE's Connections magazine, and the title of it is Questioning the Orthodox Beliefs of Association Governing. Jeff, thanks so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure, Wendy. Thank you for inviting me to write the article and also to have this podcast interview with you.
So, Jeff, let's dive right in. Tell us what an Orthodox belief is and why is it important for those of us in the association management community to examine them?
So, I've been talking about Orthodox beliefs for a while now, and an Orthodox belief is a deep-seated assumption that we make about how something is supposed to work in the world, how our associations are supposed to work, what they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to do. And in the case of governing, it's the assumptions we make about how governing is supposed to work. And it's important for us to examine them because, as I've been saying for quite a few years now, we are living through a time of relentless, accelerating, intensifying societal transformation. A lot of it's driven by technology, but it's not entirely about technology. It's really more comprehensive than just technology. And so given this transformation that is happening all around us, we have a responsibility, and by we, I mean those of us who are decision makers and those of us who work with decision makers. We have a responsibility to examine these deep-seated assumptions, Orthodox beliefs, very closely and determine whether or not they are still true. And if they are true, are they still helpful? And if they're both still true and helpful, then they may be okay. But if they're not true, or they're not helpful, or both, then we need to really ask the question, why do we still hold these beliefs? So for me, examining orthodoxy is a very necessary part of the unlearning that we have to do in order to open ourselves up fully to the possibilities of transformation in every phase of what we do in our organizations. And that includes the work of governing, which is so important to the future thrivability of associations.
Absolutely. So, Jeff, when we talk about these deep-rooted beliefs and these orthodox beliefs that association professionals hold and perhaps our volunteer boards hold, can you tell me a little bit more about the beliefs themselves that you're writing about in your article for us?
Sure. So I think, you know, the first thing to say there is there are many, many orthodox beliefs about governing, because the thing we have to understand about the way we govern our organization, this is not just governing in associations. It's governing in nonprofit organizations. It's governing in corporations, too, as corporate governance as well. It's all based on a lot of assumptions about what boards are supposed to be doing, what work they're supposed to be focusing on, how that work is supposed to be conducted. What mindset they should be bringing to the table, how it should be structured, you know, what are the mechanics of it as well. There's a tremendous number of orthodox beliefs that exist around all these ways of doing business, all these practices that we've been using for such a long time. And many of these practices date back not just, forget about the 20th century, many of these practices date back to the 19th century and perhaps even earlier than that. They've just been carried along for many decades and, you know, perhaps more than a century or two into the time that we're living in now. So we've really got to examine them very carefully. So some of the things that I write about in the article, and I just want to focus on one or two here. One that I think is particularly important to recognize is that there's an assumption made, an orthodox belief that board presiding officers, and that's a term that I use now generically to describe every leading officer of the association who's serving on a voluntary basis. So whether we call them chair or we call them president or whatever terminology we're using, I use the term board presiding officer. So the assumption is that board presiding officers are somehow more important than other directors. And it's understandable that we think that way because we invest a lot of responsibility and authority in those board presiding officers. When someone becomes a board chair or president of an association, that person is very visible. That person represents the association many times. to other organizations, or they participate in activities with governments. They go to industry or professional conferences. They will testify before the legislature or perhaps before Congress, you know, on a federal level. They will be a media presence as well, potentially, for the association. So it's understandable that this kind of unique status that goes with being the presiding officer, it gives the impression that they are somehow more important than all the other directors of the board. The problem is it's not true, right? We invest them with a lot of responsibility and authority, partly because that's what's required of us. You know, governments expect to see there being an officer who has this authority. That's an expected part of our structure of our bylaws and things like that. But the reality is that added responsibility or authority doesn't mean that the board presiding officer is more important than other directors. It just means they're busier than other directors. Every director has an equal claim to the direction of the way the board's work will go, and they have an equal claim to say, we want to talk about this, or we think we should do this. And certainly, if it's an individual director, certainly the majority of the directors, if they feel that the board's work should go in a certain way, it doesn't matter really what the board presiding officer thinks. If the majority wants to go one way and the presiding officer wants to go another, the majority still rules. So we've got to differentiate, I think, between the idea of respecting what the board presiding officer does and all the responsibility that goes along with the job, because it can be quite a bit and it can take a lot of time and require a lot of attention. But we shouldn't encourage directors on boards to be deferential to board presiding officers simply because someone holds an office. And that's true, I think, of all officers. Like, it's fine to respect the work that they're doing. That's absolutely appropriate. And it doesn't mean that you get to be impolite, you know, or sort of go after them, attack them in some way. But you do have a responsibility as a director not to be deferential and instead be focused on what's in the best interest of the association and its stakeholders. And that does not necessarily always line up with what the board presiding officer thinks should be done. So respect and deference are not the same thing. And it's important that we not encourage directors to think of themselves as somehow less than the presiding officer of the boards on which they serve. They are equal in terms of their ability to influence what goes on, or should be, even though the board presiding officer will have additional responsibilities and authority based on what's in the bylaws. So an important thing for us to think about, especially when sometimes boards, you know, don't always maximize the participation of every director, it falls to a small number of directors, namely the executive committee, right, led by the board presiding officer. Frequently, that group really has more influence over what happens within the board, and we've got to defeat that idea, because it's really counterproductive to the way boards should operate.
So, Jeff, from the standpoint of creating that culture of respect but not deference, and creating an environment where all members of the board of directors feel they're on equal footing, have equal voice, have equal input into the direction of an organization and how best to complete the mission, meet the goals. Do you suggest that there are some things we could do, for example, in board orientation to help, or what do you think would be the best way to set up that equal playing field?
Mm-hmm. So I think it actually has to come even before board orientation. I think we have to look at every phase of the process by which boards are created, developed, and then operate. So it begins with identification and selection of directors. And one of the things that I'm working on right now, Wendy, is the idea of we've got to do a better job of framing up and creating a powerful director experience, or DX, as I call it. Everyone today, if you notice, if you look around at what people are talking about today in the world of business and organizations, one of the main themes that you keep hearing people talk about is this idea of creating an experience, right? We've got to create a user experience. There's even an abbreviation for it, UX, right? We've got to create a customer experience, CX. We've got to create an employee experience. It's something that's being discussed. In healthcare, you hear people talking about patient experience. You hear people talking about the physician experience, right? Everywhere you go, people are talking about how do you create an experience for people that resonates with them over time. Well, my question is, and this is something that, as I said, I'm working on and I'll be writing about and talking about going forward, is what is the director experience we want to create, the DX that we want to create for association and nonprofit directors? And in order to create a powerful DX for those people who serve on boards in associations and nonprofits, we've got to start at the level of identification. How do we identify people who are best suited to serve in a governing role? How do we tie into their motivations for service with making sure that there are clear expectations for what it is they need to do in this role, right? So that's one aspect of it, making the connection between expectation and motivation. Another aspect of it is how do we make a connection between orientation and contribution? In this case, orientation isn't the event we have with them when they are selected to be on the board. It is the way that we encourage them to think about their work as part of the board, right? So instead of orientation as a discrete event, it's orientation, say, in the way that pilots think about orientation, right? A constant orientation to your environment. And that's a dynamic process, right? That's something that continues to evolve. And so making a connection between what is the orientation of the board and each director who is serving, and how does that tie into their ability to contribute, right? And then the final aspect of that, of sort of the elements of the director experience, is how do we help directors focus their attention on what's most important and then connect that to their ability to help the organization create maximum value for stakeholders. So there's really three kind of ideas embedded there: expectation and motivation connected to each other, orientation and contribution connected to each other, and then attention and creation connected to each other. And again, I'll be writing more about this and speaking more about this as the year unfolds, but I think every aspect of the process, from identification, selection, to the time that we first organize a board, to the time when they're meeting with each other, to their ongoing development processes, to their ongoing assessment of their performance and perhaps their assessment by others of performance, that entire sequence of events, that entire continuum, we have to look at how the director experience plays out in each aspect of that to ensure that directors understand their role is to serve the association and not to serve the chair or the board presiding officer. And of course, there are other, you know, things they can do as well, but that's the starting point, I think, for having a richer conversation about this than I believe we have had up till now.
Well, as the chief staff executive of GSAE, I love everything about what you just said. We are going through, absolutely, we're going through, we have a governance task force that's actually reporting recommendations to our board of directors that absolutely hones in on that talent identification and cultivation to the extent that they're recommending a complete overhaul of our nominating committee process and turning it into a leadership development committee that is an ongoing onboarding, identifying process that creates, you know, not just a deep bench of talented, servant-minded leaders, but also a deep bench and of cultural awareness of how GSAE operates. So I can't wait to hear more about that. You mentioned a little bit about refocus, and I'd love to follow up with talking about the rebranding of your company, Foresight mm-hmm. First LLC. Mm-hmm. It sounds really interesting and cool, but at the same time, it's a little ambiguous. So could you talk to me a little bit about, you know, well, I mean, cool sounding things sometimes are ambiguous sounding. But sure. Can you tell us a little bit about the direction you're kind of taking? You've been known as a big thinker in our association community for a long time. And I love seeing you so energized by talking about these orthodox beliefs and how we can combat them and overcome them to really become successful in leading our organizations. So,
mm-hmm. So, thank you for the opportunity to chat about it just briefly, because it actually ties into one of the other orthodoxies that I read about in the article, which is this idea that we have to, the way I read it on the article is short-term concerns are more important than long-term thinking. And that is the Orthodox belief. And that is absolutely true in not just in associations and nonprofits, but in the corporate sector as well. And the corporate sector is well known. You know, one of the challenges of corporate governance, well understood, is this idea that corporate boards are way too focused on short-term issues. They're way too focused on the quarterly stock price or the daily stock price, quarterly earnings, the whole nine yards. And that kind of short-termism, I think, has become a problem for association nonprofit boards as well. And I think there's a reasonable, you know, analogy to be made between the way that corporate boards think about their shareholders and the way associations think about their members. And it encourages a kind of short-term view at precisely the moment in our trajectory of our society when we need a long-term perspective. And that long-term perspective is something that is absolutely essential right now because we face very complicated and actually increasingly complex challenges in the years ahead. So with that in mind, after 15 years of principled innovation, which I celebrated on February the 1st, and I didn't just decide to do this on February the 1st, I've been thinking about this for the last couple of years, really. But I made a decision at the beginning of last year that I would rebrand Principal Innovation to Foresight First in order to celebrate the 15th anniversary by really putting a different brand on it and also a different focus, right? So the brand is intended to kind of revitalize, you know, the work that I've been doing for a long time, and I'm still doing work around strategy and business models and a lot of work like that. But to really focus my purpose on what I am passionate about and where I really want to make a dent in the universe, if I can put it in sort of Steve Jobs language, over the rest of my career, which is the purpose is really to strengthen board performance by helping boards build a consistent practice of foresight. There is no group inside an association that has the combination of responsibility, authority, and opportunity like the board of directors to actually engage in the work of foresight. Doesn't mean that others don't participate. In point of fact, we need lots of other people to participate in the work of foresight. But where the crux of it, I think, where the real emphasis, where the real devotion of attention, that's why attention is one of the elements that I mentioned earlier for director experience, you know, where the attention is really focused on what could the future look like for our profession, for our field, for our industry. And no group has the responsibility like boards do, the legal and fiduciary responsibilities that boards have, the authority under the bylaws and in the law itself and under regulations to take action, and frankly, the opportunity to have these kinds of conversations because they are really the only group that we know that is definitely going to meet every year within the association's framework. Not every committee, not every task force is going to necessarily have a regular meeting. We know that the board is likely to meet 2, 3, 4 more times per year. So they have actual opportunities to have discussions about the future. And so what I, you know, am trying to do with Foresight First is really move that conversation forward, move boards out of the traditional assumptions about what it is they're supposed to be doing, right? Move beyond, think and act beyond orthodoxy, as I like to phrase it, and get them into the place where they are focusing almost all of their attention on what the future is going to look like, because we need them to do that. We desperately need them to be the ones who can have those conversations, as I said, because really no one else is capable of having them in the way that they can. And doing that deep dive and doing that, the richness of learning that is going to be required going forward. So I am excited about it because I think that it's so necessary. We have a group of directors who are going to be coming up over the next few years who I think will really see the value in this. It's going to be a much more intellectually challenging and stimulating kind of an experience. It's going to be, there's a real richness in it for the people who are participating. So the experience itself will be very powerful, and it will help our organizations and our stakeholders move in a much more positive direction as the transformation of our society continues. So I am excited. I'm looking forward to, I'm doing a lot of work in this regard now to provide tools and resources that associations and chief staff executives like you and boards can use to drive this process into their organizations. And I think it has the potential to be very transformative for our association marketplace.
That's astonishing. It truly is. I love that you're talking about processes and roadmaps. Are you finding, as you're delving even more deeply into the work you've done in the past, and is there particular advice that you would give to association boards and association CEOs who are concerned about what the future holds? And we're talking about having these conversations about orthodox beliefs. Do you have a first place for them to start that you could share with us today? If they're, you know, that paralyzed with fear idea comes to mind as we're talking right now.
Well, I think a couple of things. I mean, I think it's always good to you know, I appreciate the opportunity to share some, you know, thoughts on what people can do. I don't think that people should be paralyzed by fear. I don't think there's any reason at the moment to be paralyzed by fear. I do think that boards and CEOs are right to be concerned. I think there is reason for concern. There are many things that are going on. There was a time, let me put it this way for you, there was a time, and I've been involved in these activities, and I know you have as well, when we participate in activities that sort of look at longer-term futures, and AFA has done some of those things, other groups have done some of those things, and those conversations were interesting, those conversations were stimulating, but they also felt very far afield, right? They felt like, okay, well, that'll happen someday. And so in that sense, it was kind of a benign process, right? You didn't really feel like maybe it made much progress, but nor did it feel like it was going to be too scary or too difficult. So that was fine then, but that's not fine today, because in 2017, I don't know anybody who doesn't feel like they're not living on the edge of a very different future, if not already in it. I think a lot of things have occurred over the course of the last 15, 20 years or so that have led us all to recognize that the pace of what's happening all around us is much faster. The impact of it is much greater. The intensity is going to grow, and it already has. And that's only going to go further down that road over the course of the next 5, 7, 10 years. And so for that reason, there's reason to be concerned, because as opposed to back then, back, you know, maybe 15 years ago, when it was merely an intellectual exercise, today we're really now having to start having conversations where people's real-world lives and real-world jobs are on the line. And I don't want to sound alarmist when I say that, because it's not all bad news, but there's no question that what's happening right now and is going to happen over the course of the next 10 years is going to fundamentally change the way all of us interact with one another, interact with work, interact in our society. All of our jobs are going to change. All of our jobs are going to require more interaction with machines. Some jobs, or at least parts of jobs, are going to go away. New jobs will be created. We're looking at a very different kind of future, and it raises lots of questions. And certainly for associations which serve professions and industries and fields that reflect, for the most part, what people do for a living, although there are obviously other kinds of associations, there's a need for us to have these discussions. So there's a reason to be concerned. So the question is, how do you do it? And I think the way that you do it is by starting with an orthodoxy conversation. What are the orthodox beliefs that we hold as an association about the way we do business, about what it is our stakeholders do, about the way we govern this association? What beliefs are we hanging on to from the last, you know, 20 years, the last 50 years, the last 100 years, that are actually not serving our interests well, that are actually preventing us from thriving in the years ahead? The article that I've written includes some of the orthodoxies around governing, but there are many, many orthodoxies that exist in associations around membership, around the way we do strategy, around the way we create value, and certainly around the way we govern. So, and that's just a short list. There's many, many more that are out there. So I think starting with an orthodoxy conversation and then marrying that to beginning the process of building a practice of foresight by ensuring that you are taking or devoting attention to conversations around what the future could look like. And I'm not asking boards to become futurists. We have futurists, and those futurists can provide useful information. I'm asking boards to become the best possible decision makers that they can be by embracing the idea that foresight helps them drive the organization's success. I just put out this meme recently that says, in the 21st century, foresight is the antidote to ignorance. And I think that's exactly what boards need to be thinking about, is how can they avoid the ignorance of what is coming at them and coming at their stakeholders by embracing the work of foresight. So I think the unlearning of examining orthodox beliefs and the proactive learning of engaging the work of foresight, doing both of those things can be enormously beneficial, will be enormously beneficial for associations and CEOs. And CEOs and board presiding officers really need to work together to make those things happen effectively in their organizations. But I absolutely believe that it can be done because I'm seeing it happen in some organizations, and I look forward to seeing it happen in other organizations. So there's definitely things you can do, and I hope everyone listening will start to take action.
That's great advice, Jeff. Thank you so much for talking with me today about the article, Questioning the Orthodox Beliefs of Association Governing. We just are thrilled that you were able to spend some time to dive a little more deeply into the topic.
My pleasure, Wendy. It's always great to talk with you.
So, everyone, I've been speaking with Jeff DeCagna, FRSA. FASAE, who's the executive advisor for the newly branded Foresight First LLC in lovely Reston, Virginia. Look for Jeff's article in the spring issue of Connections Magazine. It'll arrive in both mailboxes and inboxes about mid-June. I look forward to seeing those of you who can join us in about 2 weeks in marvelous Macon, Georgia for the GSAE annual meeting, May 31st through June 2nd. And if we miss you, please don't hesitate to reach out to connect with us or with Jeff further information about these topics. And we appreciate all of you listening today. And for GSAE, this is Wendy Cavanaugh.